You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Offspring. I'm Robert from Whittier, California.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Robert from Whittier, California. So you're probably wittier than both of us.
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you tell a little about yourself? This is the first time you've ever been on our show.
Yes.
What are you doing, Whittier?
Well, I live in Whittier. I'm actually the night manager of Hilton Garden Inn in Montebello.
Hmm. Okay.
By the way, I must say, that explains a lot about the tweets that I received.
Which one?
So I think it's often you always seem to be going to work and coming back at weird times, even if I take into account the time differential.
Okay, so Robert, why is Picard pissed about Lau?
Well, it's funny. I hadn't seen this episode in a while, and then I watched it when I got home from work this morning before we recorded, and I forgot how pissed he was at Data, because Data had basically in secret built another Data, and Picard's throwing a fit about it at first.
Right. Yeah, we'll get into that. Okay, that makes sense. That's why you had that on there. Okay, well then, you've been on 10 Forward, right?
Yes.
Yeah, James was telling me. What else have you... have you been on any other shows? Done anything else?
I did Trek News and Views when that was still a podcast, and I did an episode of Commentary Trek Stars. The synopsis for tonight's show is, Data successfully creates a new android, which he views as his child. However, the magnitude of his accomplishment quickly attracts the scrutiny of Starfleet, who wants to separate the child from Data and the Enterprise for study. Matters are complicated further when the child begins to develop beyond Data's abilities. This is episode 16 of season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date was March 12, 1990. It was written by Rene Echeverria and directed by Jonathan Frakes. Guest stars include Haley Todd as Lau, Nicholas Coaster as Admiral Heifel, and special guest star Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan. So what do we think about this episode? It's an interesting episode.
Hmm. Okay. James?
Interesting. I mean, I am of the opinion that this is the best episode of Trek that we've come across so far. I am a huge fan of this show, and I really do. I love almost every single scene of it. I had completely forgotten, because it's in my mind, that this is Rene Echeverria's first show on Trek, and he obviously hangs around for the next 10 years or so. Hmm. I had completely forgotten about that. But I'm a big fan of this show. Lou?
Same here. Absolutely. I love these thought-provoking ones, and this really does this in spades. There's a lot to... I'm going to do a lot of complaining, but none of it is about this show. It's about, you know, where does Starfleet get off deciding that they're just going to separate this family? Because I think that this is, I don't know, sometimes I think Star Trek is an allegory for life, or they're trying to tell a story about today, and this is probably one of those times. So, hold on. I'm sorry, I don't know why, but I lost my notes. Here we go. The Offspring. Okay, so Commander Riker's on personal leave, right? Which means Deanna is still on the ship. So since he didn't take the ball and chain, I assume he might have gone to Ryza. Where do you guys think he might have went?
He probably went to Ryza. Okay. No, I think this conference was on Ryza because Riker does his best work on Ryza.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course he does. But he said he's on personal leave, so... I'm sure he still went to Ryza. Let's see. Okay. So Data has called three of his best friends to join him in the science lab so that he can introduce Deanna, Wesley, and Geordi to his new creation, Lao. So, Data created a new child, another android, and named it Lao. But he's going to give the android the ability to choose its own sex and appearance. That would be pretty nice, wouldn't it? If I could change my, you know, choose my own sex and appearance. What about you guys?
I don't know where you're going with this. but if you are called Lao, right, you're not necessarily going to very easily fit in as a Klingon warrior, are you?
No, I don't think so. I am Lao, House of Data. Doesn't work, does it?
Actually, maybe I am Lao, Son of Data. Might work, I don't know.
I don't know. Robert, any ideas? Any thoughts?
No, that doesn't work. That's like saying I am Quark, son of whatever.
Keldar, I think.
Keldar.
I think it was Keldar.
It is Keldar.
Okay. Ooh, that just like come up to me. Okay, so, all right, let's go ahead and get to the meat of the argument. Data has created a new life from his own being. Who the hell is Starfleet to even consider that they have a say in its progression?
Okay. So what? Let me ask a more broad question. What exactly is this episode about? Because I do think that there are a lot of things in it. And also, the episode kind of goes through various phases of it being about, Data wanting to create a life and Picard getting a bit annoyed about it at the beginning, to the idea of, the life kind of, being a child and having a bit of moments there. And then you have this kind of threat where the Federation Admiral kind of comes in. And I certainly don't think they have any authority at all to ask him to hand over Lao. And I don't think logically it makes sense. But I've always considered this as part of, really, you have to put a threat onto this story. Because otherwise, you probably just lose a bit of momentum in the storytelling. And I think that the only reason why the Admiral is here and he wants to take away the child is, okay, there's a certain amount of suggestion about, people having their kids taken away, but I don't think it's really a commentary on that. I think it's much more that they need an external threat in order to, progress the drama. And certainly if the final scenes are that she's had a bit of a nervous breakdown after having been interviewed by him, then he certainly gets painted as the villain.
Hmm. Well, the only way I can see it possible is if Data is the property of Starfleet, which we've established he is not the property of Starfleet. And obviously, it's one of Starfleet's computers creating a new computer. If Data was a property, then anything that comes from him is also a property. But we've established it's not. He's not property of Starfleet. He's just no different than Crewman Jones on Deck 24 having a child. and Starfleet deciding that Crewman Jones isn't fit to be a parent.
I agree. I think the only thing that, you know, when I was going through in my mind, I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe if this was something that Data created whilst effectively, you know, working on, quote, Starfleet time, mm-hmm. and if it was, you know, if it was something like he had written a novel or something like that, then perhaps they might have a claim to a certain amount of royalties. But then if you just flip the argument and suggest that, you know, I don't know, you know, Crewman, you know, Smith and Crewman Jones are creating a baby on Starfleet time, they're obviously not going to take away the baby, are they?
No.
So I think they have zero real kind of claim here. But the episode doesn't, you know, the episode seems to acknowledge that there's at least a suggestion that she could be taken away. And I don't quite know where that comes from.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Robert?
Could it be that this admiral could be sort of Maddox's boss from the season 2 episode, A Matter of a Man?
Measure of a Man?
Measure of, yes. Could this be his boss? And in an effect, this could be construed as a round 2 then, since Maddox lost round 1, and they find out that Data creates a new Soon type robot with the positronic matrix.
So since his subordinate didn't accomplish the job, that he's going to try again?
Yes.
I'm thinking of an argument they actually have in... It's more toward the end. It's actually... let me see here. I'm going forward in my notes here, 30 spots, but it says... Haftel tries to convince Data to send Lol voluntarily. When that doesn't happen, Data wants to be the one to raise her, you know, the way he sees fit. The Admiral decides he's just going to take her, which Picard basically puts his career on the line. But that's still not... Hold on. Okay, no, I'm sorry. Let me redo that. The Admiral, going a little bit further, the Admiral says... they both agree that Lal may be a technological step forward in the advancement of artificial life forms, and work like this demands to be done in a controlled way. But being on a starship is essentially effective isolation. That was his argument, in effective isolation. But still, a child that's born on the ship is born in effective isolation as well. Why is that any different?
And now, I don't think it is any different, except that I think in my mind, I think the only justification I can see on Starfleet's side is that they probably have the right to refuse to allow Lal to stay on the ship. So if Starfleet felt that it was uncomfortable, or it became too much of a threat that you had these two guys, for whatever reason, I can imagine them deciding that they weren't going to have Lal on the ship, per se. And they might have even suggested to Data that he wasn't allowed to keep his daughter with him whilst performing the daily job. Mm-hmm. I think that's more or less acceptable. But I do think that given the issues that were raised during The Measure of a Man, I think Data should have the complete right to resign Starfleet and to walk out with Lal. I think, and I don't think they make that explicit, and I think they perhaps could have done and kind of probably kept some of the continuity.
Right. I was just thinking that too. You know, Data was ready to resign when it came to himself being experimented on, but yet when this admiral says, go get her, bring her to me, I'm taking her away, Data just gets up and says, okay, until, you know, Picard steps in and says, no, stand your ground. No, I'll give up my command. This is sometimes men of good conscience have to do that. But I'm curious why, you know, Data was so willing to just capitulate, give her, hand her over. There's no way I would have done that.
Oh, I didn't read it that he was going to hand her over.
He got up out of the chair and was ready to walk out and go get her. Until,
well, you don't know that. He could have got out of the chair in order to walk over to the Admiral to land one between his legs.
Ah, that could be. Yeah. But, I mean, I would expect Data to give a little more resistance. No, will not do that, sir. That's why I thought when he just got up, it looked like... Because if that was the case, Picard wouldn't have had to say, stand your ground, Mr. Data.
Sure, and what we're talking about here, right, we're talking about the Lal being brought up and being brought into, brought up as an android on another in another place. What we had in The Measure of a Man was that we had Data being ordered to be taken apart and to be experimented on.
Mm.
And it was much more likely that, even though it's not, in my opinion, within the right of Starfleet to take away the child, I don't think we're led to believe that there would be the death of the child or any active harm. I think everyone wants, obviously, Data to have, to be able to raise his family.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's a matter of life and death, as The Measure of a Man was portrayed, for example.
Yeah. Hmm. That's true. Okay, so let's come back to the beginning in which Data says, do you wish me to deactivate Lal? I mean, Picard was upset. Why he was upset on that, like we've said, makes no sense. But Data offering to deactivate Lal. So I was thinking, James, since you and I have been doing this well over a year, I just realized that you did not inform me that you and Mrs. Dr. Roberts were planning to have Cassia. So I think I should be really upset and insist that you deactivate her.
I think that's a very reasonable position for people to have, yes. Now, to what extent is Picard's kind of upset at the front here, just a way to get some good lines out of Data and to get good lines out of Troy? Because I think it's slightly out of character, but it does allow Data to mention that, I've not noticed anyone else, speak to you about their reproductive, issues. Or the bit where I think when he mentions to Troy that I fail to understand how an android with a strength of 10 men could be considered a child, and Troy gets to say, "Whoa, you're not a parent!" Ha ha ha.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those lines work quite well, and maybe the entire reason why Picard's a bit annoyed was so that those could be said and those could be just uttered.
You think? Because I don't necessarily believe that Picard was upset for Picard's sake. He just like he says, "Do you have any idea what Starfleet will do when they hear about this?" I think that's the only thing. Whereas if he told him, "Captain, I'm thinking about creating this android," then in the beginning he could have said, "Well, just remember, Starfleet will consider this property," or will, I don't know. I'm not sure if it was really he was upset about it, but I don't know. Robert, what do you think about it?
I think he was more upset because Data did it without letting anyone know about it.
Yeah.
It just, because all of a sudden he's working in secret in his lab. Nobody can get into the lab, mm-hmm. which raises another question why Wesley was trying to get into the lab. Mm-hmm. But because he was doing it in secret and didn't tell anybody, I think that might have been what upset Picard the most.
That's true. You just mentioned about Wesley. He keeps that lab locked, and I glazed over that part. How do you know that? Uh-huh, right. I mean, it's really strange is that even when he displayed Lal for the three in the lab, I guess, not one of them said, "Well, congratulate." Well, no, I take that back. It was later that Deanna does say, "Congratulations, Data, it's a girl." That's after she chose to be a girl. But in that moment, nobody said, "Well, this is great, Data." They were all like, "Oh, crap. What have you done?" Did you guys feel that same feeling, too?
I got the impression that to begin with, they were a bit unsure what exactly this was, whether it was an android that he had created or it was something else. Because I think, Crusher certainly said in there, he gets surprised when it calls him father. Mm-hmm. And so I think that to begin with, they didn't quite know how to play it. And then afterwards, I think they're just in shock rather than in any way being judgmental.
Okay. Robert?
I think it was just more shock.
Yeah.
Because Data had successfully done something that up until that point, no one had been able to replicate or come close to replicating.
Okay. All right, so before we go on, Doc, just one question. You haven't deactivated Cassia yet, have you?
No, not yet. In fact, just you might be able to hear her crying in the background.
Yeah, just leave her alone. She'll be fine. I can handle her. Okay, so Data.
Actually, I haven't said all of this. I mean, I know that Data comes along and says that you know no one else speaks to you about about stuff when they want to have children. Mm-hmm. But I'm not entirely sure that would be 100% true. I think you would probably have to inform the captain if, you know, two officers started seeing each other, and you probably would want to inform him as well when they started trying for kids, just down to like logistics and stuff. Mm. So I, of course, it's not, wouldn't never be played out in the way it's played out in this episode, where effectively, you know, the admiral comes in and takes away your baby because it's decreed that the baby's not safe to be on the Enterprise. But I think that, you know, there probably is a little bit of information that goes up to your superiors as you're progressing through life.
Well, if that's the case, then I blame Picard for Keiko. I mean, you know, Captain, yes, Mr. O'Brien, this lady down in the Arboretum, I'm thinking about dating her. No! Don't do it. I know her. She's a bitch. Don't do it, Miles. But no, he didn't. He encouraged it.
We've got about 5 months or 6 months or so before we get onto Keiko.
Oh, that's right.
And I honestly don't see what people have against Keiko. I think she's great, and she's just lovely. Why does anyone have a go at Keiko?
Okay, TNG Keiko, but. When we get to Lower Pylon 3, is it?
Lower Pylon 2, it is.
Oh, jeez, I did it again. But when we get to Lower Pylon 2, I expect that your attitudes on Keiko will...
No. If anything, they get reinforced. Oh. Because, you know, O'Brien's the everyman that needs constant pain and suffering in his life. And as a result, Keiko is perfect in everything that she does. But this is not...
Sorry, I have to jump in here. Have you not seen Deep Space Nine? The only good Keiko episode, or let me rephrase it, the only episode where people like Keiko is when she's possessed by a Pa-Wraith.
Yes.
Evil Keiko.
Yes.
And that's the only time people like Keiko.
We gotta start a drinking game. Every time we hear a whiny Miles. Okay. Yeah, oh, okay. We'll get there. We'll get there for Lower Pylon 2. Okay.
Let's see. But back to your earlier point about the chain of command and letting the superiors know, there was that running, well, I don't want to say running joke, but there's that running gag on Deep Space Nine about that one crew member who, I guess, whose species, the males that give birth, and they lay eggs. And Sisko had to be notified about it, and he had to be aware of it to arrange and expand the crew quarters.
That's a fantastic call. Yes, they do that. Although I get the impression it's more that, you know, he put in his request for having a bigger living quarters rather than anything else. But you're right. There's a, you know, yeah. Sisko gets informed and he goes, "What? Again? How many is that?" And I remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was budding. that's pretty good. I gotcha. Okay, so let's come back. Data scanned all available literature on parenting. So do you think he read the Android version of What to Expect When You're Expecting? Or I guess it could be called What to Compute When You're Computing.
That's not what it would be called at all. But... Did he even mention that he read all of the thing on parenting?
Yeah, he scanned all available literature on parenting, which I think is useless in his case. None of it matters.
No, absolutely. I mean, if you do look at the stuff on parenting, it's all about, you know, Well, I mean, the vast majority of the first, I'll probably say 6 months, is going to be about feeding the thing and getting milk down the throat. That clearly isn't applicable here. And, you know, changing nappies and or diapers or whatever you want to call them. So it does seem a bit extreme. Yeah, at a certain point, he probably should have said it's not relevant for him.
Yeah. Spare the rod, spoil the child. In other words, Data's saying, and don't worry, I will spank her when necessary. You know, I mean, he doesn't have to worry about holding the head properly, you know, because he can't hold their own head, or don't drop the baby, don't let it get its head caught in the slots of the crib, you know, don't give baby aspirin. There's a bunch of things that just aren't relevant to him. But, you know, I am curious about one thing they didn't really discuss. I mean, they send her right to school. And she can't handle going to school because she can't be with the older crowd. The younger crowd are too afraid of her. But I was just thinking that why would they send her straight off to school? I mean, doesn't Data need to take some family leave and, you know, paternity leave and be with his child for the first few months and then send her off to daycare and...
Well, what I actually like about this episode in particular, certainly this kind of middle bit, or maybe the first, maybe third through to two thirds, is that, because it's Data and because it's an android, baby, they can very quickly condense a lot of stuff about, you know, bringing up children and what children are like and the issues surrounding it. And they could just play it out very, very quickly. And, I mean, you're talking about them going to school straight away, yeah. But I think even before that, you see that, you know, originally the Lal is very much kind of asking relatively simple questions, and then very quickly she starts getting this like thirst for knowledge and asks lots of, you know, deeper philosophical questions almost that Data finds hard to answer. Uh-huh. And I thought that scene in particular was great, and it's when Data ends up effectively turning her off, or, you know, if you're nice about it, putting her to sleep, that he mentions that tomorrow you have to go to school, or tomorrow will be your first day at school. And then when she does go to school, she just can't socialize with them. And I find all of this really, you know, I find it really kind of heartbreaking to watch, because you see in this episode, you see an entire developmental stage of children from the most helpless state through to being the curious, to having trouble socializing, to potentially not reaching their full potential, to, you know, in the end, dying in your own hands. And I think that this arc is kind of really, it's really emotional. I think it's wonderful throughout this episode.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. He read all available literature on parenting, but yet as soon as she starts to ask questions and he can't answer them quick enough before she's asking the next one, he just decides to shut her off. Would you think that that's a form of some kind of child abuse, child neglect, to just shut the child off?
No, I think a lot of parents wish they had an off button.
Yeah, but they don't. And so, you know, as a human, we have to deal with it. But as him, well, there's that button that we can use.
I mean, in a way, you don't want to really see Data dealing with the kind of the full consequences of children, including, you know, maybe 9 months of sleepless nights and, you know, an absolute strain on his personal life and all of that kind of stuff. You do want it to a certain extent to be a more kind of a clean version of reality.
Oh no!
And I think the off switch is affecting the same thing, right?
No, that's not what I want to see. I want to see Data strolling on the bridge 10 minutes late because he had trouble with Lal getting dressed that day, or no, he can't go to the poker game because he can't find anyone to watch Lal.
Well, actually, we've discussed this before about what happens in Star Trek with babies, and I always point out that in babies and you know, sitcoms and other shows as well. As soon as you have a baby, what you have following the baby is unfortunately about 15 months of an extremely boring baby, mm-hmm. doing nothing but feeding and, you know, passing whatever's left out the backside and screaming. And from a drama perspective, no one wants to see that, which is why babies go from being born to being 4 years old when they start asking questions and get inquisitive as fast as possible. Which is why in this episode, effectively, you go exactly the same thing. You go from baby being put together in that big, you know, metal diaper kind of gold paint thing into effectively what is a toddler, which is when we see Lal for the first time.
Right. But I think it'd have been funny if Data had a pee stain on his shirt because she peed on him while he was trying to change her. She peed on me.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
No, because she was, you know, 5 foot. But she was a baby android. I mean, that's another interesting question I just thought of. Why couldn't she have started as a baby? Give her just a little bit of programming, and then as time goes on, you make her a bigger android and a bigger and a bigger, and you change her programming to be just like a baby.
Are you talking about physically a baby?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he could have made her whatever size he wanted. Go through the whole shebang.
Sure.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you don't have to because she's an android. You just put her in anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, before we go on to her choices of what she wanted, Robert, do you have any more to add?
No.
Okay. And let's see, there was how many thousands of choices were there that she had to choose from? I forgot that number.
I think it was mentioned that the Data had whittled it down to several thousand.
Several thousand.
And I think then Troy goes, thousand? Mm-hmm. And she, it is a big decision.
Yes, it is. But she narrowed it down to an Andorian female, a human male, a human female, a Klingon male. So the Andorian female, obviously, I don't know if that would have worked, but do you think her antenna would have spun like they do on Enterprise? Hey, those were pretty cool, actually. If you consider the original series, Andorian with just like sticks of something on their head, to the Enterprise Andorian, where they actually turn and move with the mood of the person. I thought those were pretty cool.
Now, I have to say, let me just tangent slightly on Enterprise. And in my opinion, at least two things they got right with Enterprise. And I'm going to go, I think they got the Vulcans completely right with Enterprise. And I'm going to defend that when people claim that they're not proper Vulcans. But I do think they got Vulcans right. And without any question, they got Andorians exceptionally right. And I absolutely love the Andorians, in particular the Shran is very good, but throughout I love the Andorians and how they're portrayed. In this episode, I don't know why the Andorian's green. I don't think we've ever seen that before or since.
That's what bothered me about that Andorian, because of Enterprise I now have this expectation of what an Andorian should look like.
Yeah. Right.
It's certainly the design of this Andorian certainly dates the show a little, and it is one of the in my mind is probably one of the very few sore spots that we see.
You're absolutely right. I never really thought about that, but I'm looking at a picture of it, and it just is completely wrong.
No, it is completely wrong.
Okay, but next was, skip the boring humans and go on to the Klingon. And I'm kind of glad that Lal didn't pick a Klingon male. It had made no sense, having two Klingon males and no females on the ship. Do you think, how would Worf gotten along with Lal, the Klingon male?
I mean, in my opinion, it's strange. I don't think that either the Andorian or the Klingon were really serious contenders. Because, you know, Data isn't a study of the Klingon way or the Andorian way. He's trying to become human. He studies humans. He works predominantly with humans. And I think, frankly, it's clear that he was going to pick either a male human or a female human. And I think that obviously, given the arc of the story, I think it's clearly all the more powerful that they choose female because of you know, the amount of emotion that it kind of brings into the relationship, whether rightly or wrongly.
Hmm. Or maybe, you know, she wanted to pick Mel, but she was worried about Deanna hitting on him because he said, attractive, no problem with socialization there. Oh, no. Uh-uh. So she picked a female.
Luke, let me ask you a question, or throw out a question there, because I don't know what the general impression across the fandom is, but I think that the both guest stars, I would say, but in particular, Lau, I think that the actress does an outstanding job. And I really think that she plays this well, because it's hard for her to play, or it's a difficult thing to play. You have to play this kind of childlike version of Data. And I really, you know, I could very easily have seen this get a little bit corny or a little, you know, with a bad performance. I think that the
Stop.
Relation. Go ahead.
Robert, are you doing something with the cable on your wire? Because you're getting static. It's like you're breaking and your connection keeps breaking on your microphone.
By the way, Robert, just to make you aware, whenever we have people on, we'll come up with these things like, it sounds like, do you have like a cat that's chewing on your cable?
And, if you couldn't hear that while you were talking.
You don't happen to have like big engineering works being done nearby. I love the way you try to extrapolate what's going on.
I know, but I'm trying to figure out what it possibly could be. Maybe we could correct it. But then again, you got to admit one thing. When Ben was chewing last week while Chris was talking, I did have restraint there. Okay. Sorry. I don't know. It's like maybe he's playing with the wiring and it's or hitting a mute button or something. It keeps doing a hard static connection. Okay, I'm sorry, James. Continue.
I don't even remember where I was. Except to say, I think that the guest stars this week are very good.
Yes, I do too. You asked what I thought, but
yeah, and I think that in poor hands, if there was a poor showing from the, in particular, the Lau character, I think that the empathy that we have and the amount of investment we make in that character, which in my opinion is the main reason why this thing works. Would have been lost, and at that point you don't have a story, or you don't have the emotional pull of this story.
Hmm. Yeah, I did. I did like it because I mean, even things like how she kept her arms and her hands, it felt very much robotic, because she obviously doesn't know what these are meant for right now, and. How does she hold her hands, or how does she hold her arms, or her head? I think Data was like that in the beginning. He's very robotic, but then he obviously has become more human. So I thought this girl did perfect. Haley Todd, I believe her name is. So yeah, I think she did great. Robert, what about you?
Well, you had asked how the fans feel about her. And when I was at Star Trek Las Vegas this past summer, I saw at least three people cosplaying Lau.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Jack, I can see that. I think it's also, to a certain extent, it's a relatively easy thing to pull off. I can imagine that would be quite fun. Now I know what I'm going as next year.
Lol.
Are you coming to Vegas next year?
Well, we haven't. What this hasn't hit the feed yet, because I think Lou, it's still 2 weeks away. But yes, I've been in two minds about it, but I'm definitely coming now. Because I got bullied into it by Ben and Chris.
Make sure you do a lot of cardio.
Yeah, in anticipation.
No, all the walking.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, he could do it. He's in good shape. At least I think. I don't know. What am I saying? All right. Oh, I've seen pictures of you, Doc. You look like a big kid at heart.
That is true.
That is true. Okay, so now Data is a single parent. Should he have maybe created a wife first? So we can complete his family?
No.
No? Why not? No.
So I think that the... Okay, so the question is, you know, A, what's a child, what's a wife? A child, and I think they describe it very nicely in this episode. I don't have the quote to hand, but he talks about it being, you know, the continuation of his life, and he talks about it, you know, him creating something that's going to surpass his own achievements and things like that. And I think it's a very noble thing to go and create a child and, you know, to continue to propagate. And I think a lot of people have that urge, whether or not, you know, whether or not they're androids or not. The idea of creating a wife, though, that's just like creating a sex aid, isn't it?
I suppose so. And maybe that's why Picard was upset, because you have to have permission to bring your wife on board or your girlfriend or whoever on board. So he didn't do that. He just brought this android back. Maybe that's why Picard was upset. Okay. So Lol can not only eat and drink, she even knows how to wipe her mushu. Pretty cool.
Now, was Lau fully functional? Because we know Data is fully functional.
Well, Riker almost found out, but I think she might be. You're new here. Yes. Bam! Lays one on him.
Well, he does mention that when she's choosing her body, he does mention to reference, like, you know, sexuality level 2 or something like that, right? So I think that I would hope that, you know, he holds back on, as Guinan mentions, right? He holds back on some of the, you know, the more detailed concrete stuff until she's old enough.
Purpose for exterior drapings, Father? Because we're not allowed to be naked, Lol. Okay. Okay, so Data has Lol for all of about 2 weeks when he's had enough of her and decides someone else can deal with her ADHD and sends her to school. We had discussed a little bit ago, you know, he just shuts her off and says, "You're going to school, Lol," and then he goes to bed. I thought that was hilarious, you know. Her ADHD.
and you know, very common to, you know, to little kids, right? To, like, mm-hmm. you know, 4 or 5 year olds. Yes. That's what they would do. That's you know, maybe because I've got small kids still, I kind of see a lot of them in her behavior. Mm-hmm. Her attention span is absolutely wonderfully played, where she goes from one thing to another. And even when she does, even when she looks at the flower and mistakes it for a painting, I think that this, you know, I identify so much with all of this. You know, I'm the complete sucker for this episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay. However, Data never did answer any of her questions. He didn't address them, so why don't we do it here? Why do we only have 2 hands? Why not 3 or 4? Let's start with that one. Why don't we have 3 or 4? It sure be a lot better.
So, okay, most things are symmetric, right? So you usually generally have 2 of things.
No.
So you do have, you usually have, you know, things come in pairs, typically. Certainly, if they, obviously you only have 1 head, but on either side, things come in pairs. And we kind of do have 4. We have 2 legs and 2 arms.
Yeah.
In a way, it's just that we've developed to walk upright. I mean, we're no better than dogs that have 4.
Mm-hmm. But imagine if we had 4 arms and 4 hands, the server at the restaurant could be holding the tray with the bottom 2 hands while the top 2 hands are, you know, passing out dishes. That'd be interesting. Juggling would be a lot better. Okay. Why is the sky black?
They're in space.
And I love the fact that it is, why is the sky black? Because you're almost expecting her to say blue. Because as a standard question the kids would ask, and mm-hmm. the fact that it's black, it's it's nice. But that should be an easy question to ask.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, lack of light, or lack of things for light to reflect from.
There you go.
Means that the sky is black.
Okay. And finally, why do... Oh, yeah, this one we'll never know because he shuts her off. So I'll ask it. Oh, I already asked that question. If our children had an off button, how often would we be pressing it? Doc, we never really did answer that. I didn't ask that question that way. If our children had an off button, how often would we be using it?
I'd like to think not that often. And actually, two nights ago, I did the late night session, and I had 2 hours of sleep between when the baby went down and when she woke up, and that was at 12, and then I had another 3 until 3 when she woke up again, and then another 2 until 5. But it's what makes things memorable. So I wouldn't use the off button.
You wouldn't use the off button. How old's your oldest one?
11.
Do you want to revise that statement now?
No. Our 11-year-old is astonishingly easy to handle and generally pleasant.
That's nice. Perhaps
we should revisit this in a couple of years.
Yeah, tell me about it. I was just chasing my daughter around the house wanting to kill her the other day. Yeah, okay, yeah. There's an attitude issue that creeps up usually around 12 and a half to close to 13 that you're going to be wishing for that off button. You're gonna come back to this moment. What about you, Robert? Do you have any kids? Or
No, I don't.
The lucky man of the call. I'm sorry, go on.
But I'm the eldest of 5 kids, so I did have to help take care of my younger brother and my younger sister. Mm. And there were times I wish they had an off button.
Because then you figure if, when they grow up, they still have that off button, so maybe my wife would have had an off button too. Sorry. God, I'm glad she doesn't listen to this show. Okay, so Admiral Halftel video Skypes with Picard to talk about the new android. And so again, you know, I guess I just don't understand who the hell is Starfleet to take away Data's child. And then, you know, he would be willing to release both Data and Lao to him. But no, that's not good enough because Data's presence would retard the new android. It's just crap. That's nonsense. You know, I agree with Picard that damage will be done if you separate this family. Thoughts?
No, I completely agree. I think that the family should... Well, I mean, the entire story is so written from the perspective that everyone agrees that Data and Lars should stay together. I question your authority under which this is being done. And I can't see what the Admiral's objection really is to having Data along, because... You know, they could have Data along for the first 2 months, and then he probably might become comfortable that she can be left alone, so you could get back to where you started from. You know, it sounds far too much like they want to do some type of experiment on this, this android based on, you know, bringing her up and bringing her into an awareness the way they want to do it, and they don't want anyone interfering with it, which to me just doesn't seem right. Now, of course, you do have kind of like an overlay. I mean, or you might wish to present an overlay of, you know, the state taking away your children because they don't deem you to be irresponsible enough, or they might deem you to be perhaps what they could have done is that they could have considered Data to be in a dangerous position, and it was their responsibility to take away the child. You know, whilst serving on the ship, he might have been in too much of a vulnerable state. But away from that, I just don't think they have any authority here.
Mm-mm. Okay. Robert?
They never said what they were going to do with Lal. They just said they wanted Lal. And then based on things the Admiral said for his justification for taking Lal, when he says there are 2 androids on the same starship, and what if a Romulan warbird should come by and blow you up. So was he thinking of trying to make an army of robot laws, or...
Hmm. How would they have handled her in school? Or, I mean...
Sorry, have we jumped... Go ahead. So, have we jumped past the school section yet?
Not yet.
When we get to it, I've got a lot of... I think that's wonderful as well.
All right.
But anyway, carry on.
Well, my next note says, Data's been called to the teacher's office because Lala's having problems. The younger children are afraid of her, and some were actually bullying her. So, what do you think? Go ahead, James, about that.
Okay, I love this scene completely. I think it's wonderful. From the moment where Data ends up sitting down, and you can almost tell that the teacher's finding it hard to kind of communicate this to Data, with him being kind of, you know, so emotionless and not really having a child in the perhaps the correct use of the word, or the biological use of the word. I like it when the teacher mentions that she achieved a very high academic score, and he corrects her and says, a perfect score.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so Data all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And from Data's perspective, he would probably almost, you know, a lack of a perfect score would suggest there's something wrong, or there would be a problem there. And then when you do see the children, and they kind of, they have managed to isolate her from the group, you know that it's exactly what children would do in these circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And you also know, I want to get into it, but from my perspective, you can almost see that Lal is isolated. And I don't think there's any question of that. She is clearly isolated, but it's almost as if she, you know, she acknowledges that she's isolated, and she, as a viewer, I feel sorry for her being placed in that situation. And I think that we later learn that she does have emotions coming through, and I read this very much as a, you know, as she is there being isolated and feeling that isolation.
Right. Okay. Robert, go ahead. You have anything you want to add to that before I ask a question?
Yeah, well, I mean, the end of that scene when Data takes Law into the turbo lift, I mean, that felt like something you see parents and kids talk about, and it felt real. When he was explaining the difference between laughing with you and laughing at you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, yes, and as you guys heard, Chris from last week is a teacher, and we made sure we asked him what his thoughts on this were. So check it out if you haven't. Go back and listen to our review for yesterday's Enterprise. Okay, so time to seek Dr. Crusher's advice as a quote-unquote successful parent. Maybe she could help Data by giving him a dancing lesson. No time for that? Maybe later. Okay. You know, is Beverly Crusher really the right person to talk to Lal? Or talk to Data about raising Wesley. But wouldn't Wesley be a good source for Lal to know how to behave as a child or a teenager? Which... Do you think both would be right?
Well, I think this is a Data coming to Beverly,
mm-hmm.
right? Rather than Lal going to anyone. Because I think in this point in particular, I think that Lal, to a certain extent, she's not aware, not in control enough to kind of take positive actions here, or to take actions that are going to influence the way that she socializes. So I think this is much more of Data finding a way to talk to someone with possibly experience in this subject to provide the guiding hand away from Lal herself, taking action herself. So I think it's more that, you know, that this is parent to parent rather than anything expected of the child.
Right, exactly. But maybe Wesley would have been able to get along with Lal. Robert, anything?
Well, I mean, Beverly was, as far as we know, is the only other single parent still on the Enterprise. So Data was probably going to the only other person who could relate to his situation.
Mm-hmm. That's true. As a successful parent. Okay, so Picard mentions that Lal in the Hindi language means beloved. Obviously, Google Translate does not know that, so I'm going to let everybody find out what Lal really means and put your answer in the forum. We're not going to tell you what it means. You got to do some work here. So put it in the Trekmate family forum, if you would, please.
Wait, you're not going to tell me that Picard wasn't telling the truth, are you?
Picard was misinformed. We're not sure. He was very misinformed. Not even a matter of a different spelling or a different inflection. He was completely misinformed. So, but y'all are going to have to look it up. All right.
Okay.
And so basically I asked a question. If she weren't 5 feet tall with heuristic learning capabilities and the strength of 10 men, what if she were a little baby? Do you think Starfleet would still want to take her?
You mean an actual human baby?
No, if he actually started out as a baby, because what he does basically is a data copy from one drive to another drive, straight from his brain to her brain. And so, obviously, had he not done that, and had her gone through life the way he went through life, and again, as a baby, if she was a little baby, would Starfleet have wanted to take her? A little baby android. Do you think they would have cared as much, or still would have tried to take her?
They still would have tried to take her, but it would have been more for to see how the positronic brain works and if they could duplicate it.
I see. That's why you're asking if the Admiral could be, what's his name? Maddox's supervisor or something. Let's get a second stab at this taking her apart thing and seeing how she works.
Yeah.
You think they really were trying that, Doc?
I think that can obviously continue in kind of research into developing, cybernetics. I think that's clearly not stopped. And there is a part of me that thinks that, you know, on the grounds that we've got to the point where we've acknowledged data as a sentient life form and potentially all, artificial life forms that are, as sentient beings with, rights and privileges. It is a bit strange that people kind of continue to research in that area, right? Because it does move into a questionable moral section. So if people were just breeding clones for the sake of it, people have a problem with that. Mm. People were just breeding babies for the sake of that. Even in today's society, there would be questions asked, or at least a moral code wrapped around it. I always find that, despite the fact that we've learned that data has rights, there doesn't seem to be a lot of ethical procedures wrapped around the reproduction of data or data-like people. And it's simply, we're saved by asking these questions solely because they've not managed to do it yet. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't quite seem to be a satisfactory position to be in.
Hmm. Okay. All right, well, let's go ahead and violate the child labor laws and put Lal to work in 10 Ford. Because it's a good chance for her to learn human behavior. Do you think it really is? Who's right here? Guinan or the Admiral? I kind of tend to side with the Admiral. I mean, she is only a couple weeks old, and she's already in a bar. Is that really the appropriate place for her?
Well, she's not only a couple of weeks old, right, in the sense that both kind of physically and then also from a developmental perspective, of course, she's kind of on an accelerated path. But actually, I think this is something that the episode does well, because I think when she ends up in the bar to begin with, and when she is brought to the bar by Data, because she needs to see social interactions, and that's what she lacks, I think everyone is very happy with it, right? Everyone thinks it's a reasonable idea, and everyone like nods along as the story goes. And we even find it funny when she, she tries to kiss Riker, and it's all good. But then that same scenario, when the Admiral comes in my mind at least, shows our heroes in a very bad light, because very quickly you think, well, actually, hang on a second, you are basically, you have her walking around serving drinks, and it's you can understand how they got there, but you also can see that it looks pretty bad when people come in, mm-hmm. and just have a look on things. So it's the equivalent of you're trying to do good with your kids and you're trying to help them, and you might even try to get them to help you around the house or possibly cook their own dinner. But if child protection come in whilst they're cooking their own dinner and not being supervised and they have a burn on their hand, then you look very bad very quickly. And I think there's a little bit of that going on here.
Okay, Robert?
Well, I mean, they had to figure out a way for Lao to learn how to interact with people to get social skills, and Tent Forward was the only place on the ship where they could do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Now, I'm trying to figure out how this possibly could happen, and I guess I don't know heuristics and robotics, but for her to be able to say, I've been programmed with over 1,400 known beverages instead of I have. Like I said, her brain is the exact of his brain. It's just a copy-to-copy format. I mean, should that even have been possible? But then again, he was able to make more realistic skin tone and eyes than he was. I guess, in a sense, he could go back and redo his eyes and his skin tone, couldn't he? Or is he just stuck with that?
Yes. So, I mean, the way that I read this, by the way, because I know that there's a lot of, they talk about a direct copy and stuff like that. And I think the a natural question to ask is, what is it that makes Data kind of sentient, or if you want to go even one step further, what makes him conscious? What makes him potentially even have a soul? And I don't ever think, and I think we're not necessarily guided towards the idea that it's just the data that he has in his head. So not just, if he were to store what he had, that wouldn't be enough to make the person. And I'm always, I think that when they talk about the kind of positronic net and stuff, in my mind at least, what they're trying to get at here is a complicated set of networks and a complicated system that in itself kind of has either consciousness or maybe consciousness or what's the other one? Sentience. Yeah. as an emergent property of the network itself. Mm-hmm. So what that means is, as soon as you kind of get into that realm, the fact that there are two people that are exactly the same doesn't mean that they're exactly the same people. It just means that they could easily have different ways of dealing with the same data, just due to the fact that the network is complicated enough and they have the information copied over slightly out of order or whatever it happens to be. So what I'm trying to say maybe here is that, Data and then Lala, they are kind of more than just a sum of their programming. And that's why I buy this idea that, when Data kind of creates his copy, he's able, even potentially on the grounds that he manages to copy in his experience. And then in addition to his experience, she also has her experience and mm-hmm. a different waking into reality and stuff. I completely buy the idea that she can assimilate that information and deal with it in a non-identical way to Data, which is when we start seeing her use contractions and then also eventually has emotions and stuff. So that's what I take away from the scientific side. Mm. But from a drama perspective, all they're trying to do here is they're trying to show that, people have children and people try their best so that their children surpass their own achievements.
Yeah,
and I think that's kind of the real kind of human story that they're trying to put across.
Hmm. Yeah, he outdid himself. I mean, because when I think about him doing a copy of his brain to her brain, to me, it sounds the same as if I clone my hard drive and put it in another hard drive. When that hard drive turns on, it's going to think it's the first hard drive. Nothing's going to be different. So, you know, why isn't she just, I'm Data in this female body? But what you're saying there makes perfect sense in that case. Robert, what about you? What are you thinking?
Well, doesn't he say at the beginning of the episode that there was a new type of algorithm or something that allowed him to successfully do all of this?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. So there's certainly like a new mechanism or a new algorithm that allowed almost like a new control feature of the network itself. So even if the information is the same, it's clearly not that it's a direct, you know, cut and paste. They haven't put Data into a replicator, right? And they might have a second Data.
Right, right. So there's going to be subtle changes. Okay, well, anyway, Data was called away from 10 forward because Picard needs to inform him that Android Protective Services is on its way to interview them, so he leaves Lal and 10 forward. And did you happen to notice as Data was walking out the door, he turns, he looks back like he's leaving his child there, and it's funny, it's subtle, but Guinan kind of gives him a nudge with her head, like, you know, go on, she's going to be fine. And I thought that was very cute, number one. But number two, I think there's a missed opportunity here. Because as soon as the doors would have shut, she could have said, God, he's annoying. You know? He keeps shutting me off. Every time I ask a question, he shuts me off. Anyway.
Dad, I hate you.
I hate you. God, I can't stand living with him. He's always clean. Every time I want to go do something, he sits me down and plugs something in my head, make me learn some more. He sent me to school. I like it here better. But, you know, like you say, she's completely new and she's just acting like a new robot. She has to learn how to be an android instead. Right? How's that? You like that? No?
Yes.
Yes.
Everybody got that? Good. Yeah. Okay. And now we get the funny moment. After, you know, while Picard is notifying Data that Android Protective Services are on their way, Riker is coming into 10 forward. And I think it was funny that Guinan left Lal to get a couple drinks. I mean, you see her on the other side of the bar, and you could see Guinan's face. Like, you know, she kind of knew something was about to happen. But that's when Lal grabs Riker and plants a wet one on him. That is a hilariously funny scene. That poor Riker, you know, he's bigger than life. Riker's bigger than life, and to see him scurry away like that was funny. Anything? Oh yeah, Commander. What are your intentions toward my daughter? Ooh, shouldn't have went out on personal leave. Thoughts?
Okay, I think this particular scene is perfect, and I like it a lot, and it's completely in keeping with everything. And also, this is kind of like Riker's, you know, small scene. He only has like a couple of scenes in this entire show. And of course, the reason why that is that Jonathan Frakes directed this episode. Mm-hmm. This is the first show that he directed, and he kind of sets a standard, I suppose, for the actor directors that are going to be following. I think overall he does a very good job, and I think that the scenes that he gave himself, in particular this one, it worked very, very well.
No, it was a very funny scene. It was just the right touch, the right light moment that we needed in this episode, because everything that happens after this, it gets kind of dark.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is true, yeah. Okay. Now, I'm not sure what this is about, because it's been a few days since I watched it, but she says that, you know, she's not able to love, or she's not able... How did this happen? Let me think here. Oh, is something about not being able to feel love is a limitation we all must accept, Lal? I'm going to go back. I don't know why I wrote that. That makes no sense to me now. So I'm actually going to pull up this
No, so what that is that, you know, she obviously sees things in 10 forward. She sees the couple that are, you know, that are sitting there and they're kind of like shooting each other.
That's it.
Including the, she's biting, he's biting that female section.
Yeah.
And then she obviously has the slightly socially awkward kiss with Riker. And then Data and Lyle go back to their room and they have a discussion about, you know, human emotions and love and stuff. And, you know, there's a quite wonderful and touching discussion that takes place between Lyle and Data, where she ends up talking about, you know, why do we endeavor to continue to be more like humans if we cannot be like them? Because there's always going to be this gulf. They won't be able to love. And she kind of presents it as that, as a gulf. And Data then turns around and he does his spiel about, you know, it's not important about the per se the destination or reaching the destination. It's more of the journey.
Mm.
And I think that's, you know, that's good. Well, I'd say it's good parenting on Data's side, but I think it's a very nice kind of, you know, a nice nice observation in any case for everyday life.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was thinking the reason why I brought that up is that Data says, you know, it's a limitation we must accept. And I thought, you know, in his own way, I think Data loves the people he is with. So I think, you know, if he misses their absence and looks forward to being with them, then I would call that, in a sense, love.
Lou, I think at some point we should do a Does Data Have Emotions spin-off show,
mm-hmm.
Or possibly a spin-off series, because I kind of agree with you, and there are some things I'm going to say towards the end of this episode that I know are going to be controversial, but I think... I think that in his own way, and I'm not necessarily using that as a get-out-of-jail-free card, but I think completely Data feels in this episode.
And mm-hmm.
I think he completely loves
his daughter. Oh, definitely. Yeah. He may act like nothing's bothering him, but oh, yeah. Okay, so we already talked about the technological step forward. Do we seriously call these people who serve drinks a cocktail waitress in the 24th century? She's capable of calculating over 60, whatever trillion calculations per second, and you have her working as a cocktail waitress. Guinan should have said, that's me you're talking about, by the way. That would have been fun, but, oh, Admiral, you've been in one or two bars in your time. And that's funny. He kind of turns his head over her. That's not the point. Okay, so anyway, Admiral Halftail and Picard interview Law. And, you know, somehow he's able to confuse her so badly that she almost suffers a complete system failure right there. But before she does, she goes to discuss... her feelings with Troy, and it seems like Deanna actually could pick up on her emotions.
Yeah, let me just make one thing. I like this scene with Lal and the Admiral and how they talk, and and very quickly they kind of, you know, without saying a huge amount, they clearly wind each other up the wrong way. And there's a bit where, you know, the Admiral's trying to make his case as to why it would be better for her to study under him, or, you know, be monitored under him, and he like says, you know, after Lal is a little bit short with him, he says, well, you know, selective verbalization is something that you'll learn, that we'll teach you. And I kind of thought, really? Is that, you know, is that the best you'll do? You've shut down an android that's talking back at you because you think he's been a bit of a smart ass. It's, you know, I don't think that's anything you should be really forcing onto this, you know, to this new life. And then, yeah, you have the issue where she then leaves and, I always took away from this that this was the catalyst. So this kind of made her, for want of a better word, scared to death.
Yeah.
And I always read it in that way. I perhaps today, for the first time, I started thinking, well, maybe this just happened coincidentally at the same time. But I very much read this as she's kind of scared to death to be taken away from her father.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, it was an interesting back and forth between Lal and the Admiral. And then Picard says, well, we haven't asked her what she wants to do.
Hmm. True.
And then Lal ends up leaving, and she has that freak out that causes her to break down.
Right, and she goes to Troy. I find it interesting that she went to Troy. Troy, an Admiral Troy. He wants to take me away, Troy. I'm scared. You are scared. Wow. And then she just walks out of her office, and Deanna follows her to the lab, where she was programmed to go in case of a malfunction, no less. That's pretty important to know. I was born in a hospital, and if there's a malfunction, I'm probably going to go to a hospital. So, good job on that one. Nothing about the sarcasm. Nothing. You're just going to let it go. Okay. Yeah, we had already talked about how the Admiral decided that, you know, he's done a good job up to this point, but they just want to take her away. And do you think we know the end? We know that Lal is end up having complete system failure. But Picard already stepped over the line. He already shut an admiral down. He countermanded his order to his subordinate. You know, I will take this to Starfleet. I am Starfleet. See to it. Nope, don't do it. Do you think Picard maybe should have gotten in trouble anyway, knowing the outcome like we do? Because he did disobey a direct order from his superior officer, like, at least twice during that interaction.
Now, I think that in terms of, from Picard's perspective, I don't think, you know, the out that I'm going to give Picard is that I don't think you can just always follow an order from your superior if it's in the legal order, or if it's, you know, him acting beyond you know, the powers that have been invested in him. And I just think that that's really where Picard got to in his mind. I think that he mentions that he fought for Data's rights, and in his opinion, he managed to square it in his mind, and that, you know, he was, you know, the Admiral was not respecting Data as an individual, and he had certain rights, and it, regardless of what someone orders you to do, you don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm completely wrong, but if you were to say someone telling you that, you know, you have, if someone orders you to shoot yourself in the head, they don't have the authority to do it, to have it carte blanche. So I think that's really where Picard was coming from by the end of the show.
Yeah.
So I always thought that he was, you know, if it's a legitimate order, he'll follow it, but he's going to take this to, you know, effectively whenever you're kept on hold and you have to talk to someone's manager when you're talking to your bank or something, he was just doing that.
Okay.
Well, this was the moment in the episode where Picard finally acknowledges that Lal is Data's daughter, because up until this point, he refused to do that.
All right, so anyway, Lal heads to the lab where she's suffering a complete failure, and Troy calls him to the lab now. So I think this final, not the final scene, but this last scene with Data and Lal, this hit. I mean, this hits hard, doesn't it? I mean, I've had computers blow out, and but never made me cry. So this was very, very sad to see her knowing that she just has to die and that she's going to die. Am I right, or do you guys?
Okay, let me come on. I'm gonna put kind of my stuff down here. And I don't mind being judged on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last like 3 minutes or so are absolutely horrendous to sit through. And I have seen this episode must be 20 times. And I've broken down on a couple of occasions on this because I find it astonishingly emotional. And in particular, you know, when I mentioned about how well Lal is played, the final words, the final sentences she speaks when she's talking to Data really get to me. And, you know, and when, you know, she's mentioning in her dying breath, she's saying that I love you, Father, and I'll feed it for both of us.
Yeah.
It just completely rips me to pieces. And actually has done for quite a while. It's not anything that, you know, that has fallen my way now that I have kids or anything like that. I've always found this to be really emotional, and I think is, you know, absolutely perfectly played.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's a I don't think that there's a more emotional ending in Trek, as far as I can recall. I think there are some more exciting ones, but this really hits me hard.
Yeah, you'll hear my comparison to this in my final thoughts, but yeah, that's, you know, I'm going to put the audio from this right here. It's moving enough to where I think it deserves. We don't do a lot of scene playing in this podcast, so. But when we do, it's good stuff. Let's do it right here. Law.
I am unable to correct the system failure.
I know.
You must say goodbye now.
I feel.
What do you feel, Law?
I love you, Father.
Feel it with you.
I will feel it for both of us. Thank you for my life. Flirting. Laughter. Painting family. Female. Human.
Lal suffered complete neural system failure at 1300 hours. I have deactivated the unit.
The crew is saddened by your loss, Mr. Data.
I thank you for your sympathy, but she is here. Her presence so enriched my life that I could not allow her to pass into oblivion. So I incorporated her programs back into my own. I have transferred her memories to me.
Okay.
No, it was a very emotional scene. And what made it more emotional was when the Admiral came out and he's explaining what had happened. And he's on the verge of crying. And then you see Geordi and Troy and Wesley, they're crying.
Yeah.
And it sort of like redeems the Admiral at the end, mm-hmm. when he tries to save Lal, but there's nothing he could do. And Data was trying to do it and explaining that Data's hands were moving so fast,
yeah.
that he couldn't see it.
Yeah, I agree there.
And the thing is, sometimes when you have scenes like this, you often, you can make them more emotional by having... Okay, you make them more emotional by having younger children. Mm-hmm. You make them more emotional by having, you know, female children, rightly or wrongly. You have them more emotional by having this kind of thing. And in this case, with, you know, the actress herself, I mean, I assume she was around 20 or so. But it, you know, I never felt manipulated by this scene. I felt that it was really, you know, properly heartfelt. And I didn't think they were, like, you know, overdoing it. And I think there's always a fine line to draw. And I think that actually, I mean, what Robert mentioned in terms of the Admiral coming out first and, you know, basically having to break the news, and him, someone that's been a real hard character throughout the episode and almost the antagonist, he comes out and he delivers his lines to Geordi, Troy and Crusher very well. And I think that they don't overdo this at all, and they really, you know, I think it's a wonderful last couple of scenes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So please feel free to call me out as a huge softy and a wuss on this.
Heck no. Uh-uh. But would you believe that today that girl is 53?
Well, it's been 20. Uh-huh. Over 25 years.
Yeah.
No, not quite 25 years, but about 25 years. So that means that she would have been, at the time, late 20s, right? I would have thought.
Yeah.
No, it'd be 25 years.
It's 1990, I think.
Yeah, and it's 2015.
Yeah. 2015, so...
Yeah, 25 years. Really, yeah. So even she would have been 28 when this was done in 1990, so this is cool.
I think she's played a little younger than 28.
I would say so.
But yeah, and certainly a lot more innocent than what you would imagine your average 28-year-old. Hey, I had three kids by 28.
I wasn't even married yet. Okay, so anyway. So the very last scene we have is Data reporting the loss of Lol to Picard, who says the crew is saddened by his loss. But he says, nah, you don't need to be because, you know, just before she went out, he incorporated her programs back to his own and transferred her memories to him. And I thought that was so sweet. And, you know, the crew is saddened by his loss, and I was saddened by his loss. But then I thought, does that mean he now knows what it's like to kiss William Riker?
I'm afraid he does.
Yes, he does.
And Commander, you don't kiss nearly as good as you think you do. No, that wouldn't have worked, I guess. All right, guys. Is there anything else we want to bring up before our final thoughts and ratings?
No. Not from my side. I've been going too long.
You've been gone too long?
I've been going too long.
Oh, you always say that, but you don't need to. It's your show. Okay. All right, then. Well, then I guess it's time to give our final thoughts and ratings on this show on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being terrible and 5 being Ben's rating for all episodes. And this time, this is a Ben. This is a Ben all the way. I think that's what we should do, Doc. Name him 1 to Ben. This is obviously a 5. I've always loved the thought-provoking stories. I like the hard questions, asking dramas, and this hits all those marks. What business does the state have to tell any citizen not only how to raise their children, but where they can raise their children? And if it doesn't match the state's wishes, then they could simply be removed for no reason. Data did nothing wrong. Had he beat her, or maybe given her cattle prod shocks once in a while to keep her in line, locking her in the lab, or maybe, you know, then the state has to step in. I would say if I was forced to side with the state in any reason, I think the number of times he just simply shuts her off perhaps might be considered some form of child abuse or neglect. But in this case, the child's happy and learning on her own. I think he probably used the off switch. We only saw it done once, but we can only assume that he probably did it a couple more times. But I think as time went on, he probably wouldn't be doing that anymore. Then we come out to find the android is not going to live. And I don't understand at this point, we didn't bring this up, why doesn't he just simply shut her down and work on the problem over time? I mean, Crusher could put people in stasis and we'll deal with this later. Why does she simply have to be alive one moment, dead the next? Just as Jonathan Frakes' first episode as a director, and I think he hits the nail square on the head. With every little nail, he hits it square on the head. When the loss of the android child the size of an adult can make you feel this emotion, it's powerful. Imagine if the android were the size of Naomi Wildman. Would our hurt even go deeper? And I alluded to this earlier, but what about Belle, the holographic daughter of the Doctor on Voyager? Like James said, when it's a child, and the smaller the child, the more the emotion. When Belle dies, I'm a blubbering idiot with emotion. And she's a hologram, but she's 4.5 foot tall, and the hologram of a human child who not only is going to die, knows that she's going to die, and has the lights literally go out before her eyes. And we're right there with him, and the doctor can't do anything about it. But parents especially are going to react to this. The episode was hard-hitting and a real emotional roller coaster. At first, we probably all snickered at the thought of Data creating another android. We laughed as she grabs Riker for her first kiss. And we're probably filled with anger at the state's decision to take her away. Because they supposedly know best, and we're all swept with sadness when Data's child dies in his arms. Just like we were when Deanna's child knew he was the cause of the problem and he had to go. We were all sad. I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you've heard that Star Trek has always been called space opera. But when it takes it for this kind of ride, it's gold. So, again, this is a very high five in my book. I love watching it. I enjoy talking about it here. You guys, thank you, Robert, for joining us. So fives all around. Anyone skipping season 3 because they don't think it's as good, you really don't care much about yourself. So I'm glad that we're... This one and the last one... This one and the last one are the ones that I was looking forward to the day James and I started Encounter at Farpoint. I was so looking for these two episodes and these days, and what's coming up is almost just as good. So it's going to get even better. So anyway, Robert, how about you as our guest? Let's go ahead and tell us your thoughts and give us your final rating.
Well, I'm going to have to give it a 5 as well. It's one of those very good thought-provoking episodes. And since now we have the ability to binge watch the entire series, we can now see that Data had his own arc, just as much as Worf had a series of episodes that were his arc. Data has his arc, and this is the second episode of the Data arc, with the first being Measure of a Man, and then Offspring, and the, I'm trying to think which one comes next, the one where he ends up in a relationship.
In theory.
No, it's Data's Day, then in theory.
Yeah, that's right.
So you can see that Data has this progression that he ends up getting to when he eventually gets the emotion chip in Generations. So, yeah, it's one of the it's a great episode. It's a great Data episode. It should be one, if you're introducing people to Star Trek, this would be one of the episodes you would show them first.
All right, Doctor.
Actually, let me just first agree and say I think this is a quintessential Star Trek episode. It is Star Trek, you know, without question. You do not get this kind of stuff in non-Star Trek, and I think that this is really what Star Trek is known for. Actually, Lou, I kind of pretty much completely agree with most of the things that you said, so I don't think I'm going to repeat myself. I think that in my mind, this is, I'm not just, you know, this isn't just the best episode of Trek I think we've reviewed so far. I'm just trying to rack my brains as to whether or not I think there's anything better. I think that this is pretty much perfect in my mind. And I really enjoy watching this. And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, actually over the last week and the following week, we're going to have some very good Trek that are almost, you know, completely diametrically opposite in terms of the way they do storytelling. And I really think that this season 3 is really picking up at this stage, and also goes out on the high as well. So this is, you know, without question, a 5-star episode in my mind. Let me think if I should throw out I challenge anyone not to think that it's great. So we'll see what people come back with. But I absolutely love it.
Okay.
And if you don't, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, no kidding. You must not like Star Trek. Okay. Well, 5s all around then again. Okay, so, Robert, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, and you responded to the call out for help because our guest couldn't make it. So thank you for pitching in on short notice. I mean, very short notice. Not only that,
no problem.
You caught a mistake I made on the date. Then I made another mistake on the time. And so you're very accommodating, and that's appreciated. So thank you.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
You are a traitor.
Worf is accused of treason and faces a Klingon death penalty.
It is a good day to die.
His enemies are hiding the truth that could free him.
You will not execute a member of my crew.
Now, Captain Picard must risk his life to defend Worf's innocence on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So hey everyone, join us next week as we review episode 17 of season 3, and that's Sins of the Father. And we're slated to have Brian Detamore on, but he's a government worker, and we never know what's happening in his life, because he's pretty busy. He's a very busy beaver. But hopefully we'll have Brian Detamore on. Yes, Ben, I said Brian Detamore. We all love Brian. The Klingon. So, for Brian, kapla. For the rest of you, thank you for downloading. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
I'm Robert from Whittier.
And he is Whittier. Thank you for downloading, and good night, everyone.
Good night.
Say good night, Robert.
Good night.
Don't tell people that.